Well, good evening. So the title of the lesson tonight is Boundaries. And for some, that word itself conjures up thoughts that are not necessarily the most pleasant. Boundaries, well, those are signs of suppression. Those are things that get in the way and inhibit my creativity, or that's an impediment to my freedom. That's what boundaries are. We don't need boundaries. But yet boundaries are, they're a fixture in our society, and if we think about it, they are a necessity of our society. Well, what do you mean? I want you to just go driving and don't worry about roads. All right, just go wherever you want to, turn whenever you want to, see how well that goes. Property lines, don't worry about those. If you want to camp in my dad's backyard, go and camp in my dad's backyard. If you want to build a house or a structure, wherever you want to, go ahead and do that. No, we understand that boundaries are necessary. In fact, I imagine that if we took away all the boundaries, took away the roads, eventually they would come back. Eventually, for an orderly society, we need to have boundaries of some sort and some aspect. So they are necessary. They're here to stay, but they are necessary. Boundaries are also a biblical concept. It's not just a societal concept, but it's also a biblical concept in many ways. Job had an opportunity to hear God. And to Job, God said, "Who shut the sea with doors? When I said, 'This far you may come, but no further, and here your proud waves must stop.'" Michelle and I had the opportunity to be at the ocean one time, and we saw those proud waves. And there was a place where those proud waves stopped. God placed boundaries for that ocean. There are numerous Levitical laws regarding what is clean versus what is unclean. Things that you can eat, things that you cannot eat, things that you can wear, things that you cannot wear. Holiness and being saints are terms which, by definition, involve boundaries. If you are holy, if you are sanctified, there is a boundary that you have placed yourself upon. You are dedicated. Dedicated and separated from something to something else. And that which is holy remains holy and dedicated to its singular purpose. And we'll discuss other boundaries that are biblical as well. And we could, this is a really broad topic, but I've been asked to speak about a very specific aspect of boundaries, and it's boundaries regarding our relationships with others. Specifically those who are closest to us, which may seem unusual. Why would we have boundaries with those that are close to us? It's necessary. And we're going to talk about what those boundaries are. We're going to talk about friends. We're going to talk about courting and dating, as well as parents and children, among others. And we're going to discuss the nature of this concept with these relationships, because we're going to show how the presence of boundaries can actually enhance a relationship, make it better, and it also can strengthen us as individuals. So I want us to think about physical boundaries. Why do we have these barriers, these boundaries, these physical boundaries? Well, we generally use them for two purposes. One is to establish ownership. This is mine. This is my property. This is my whatever it may be. Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 14, "You shall not remove your neighbor's landmark, which men of old have set." That concept comes up a number of times. The landmark that's there that establishes property lines, don't move it, because those landmarks define what is theirs and what is yours. We also see this when raising up children, putting two kids in the back seat. Eventually, there's going to be a boundary that comes up. It may be a hand. Don't cross this line. You see this crack? Don't come over here. It may be a pillow, whatever it may be, but kids, and you're laughing. She's like, "Yeah, happened on the way here." We also have national boundaries. Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 4 through 5. Moses reminded Israel about what happened on their journey. says, regarding Israel's approach to the land of Edom during their wanderings, God said, "Do not meddle with them, for I will not give you any of their land, no, not so much as one footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as to a possession." You have your land, Israel. It is not this land. This land belongs to someone else. That land belongs to someone else. It's not yours. So God has established boundaries within this. And we see this in Acts. Acts chapter 17 on Mars Hill. God has established the boundaries in the times of nations. Joshua chapters 13 as well as 15 through 19 details the borders of the boundaries of the various tribes. And if you read that, it says, go to this brook and all, and it's kind of tedious, but God is very specific. These are the boundaries for your tribes. We have our own borders of various levels of government. Here's the border of the city of Lee's Summit. It butts up against the city of Blue Springs, but there's a very clear boundary. We may not be able to see it, but it is marked and it's understood and it's honored. This is mine. Another idea that we have with boundaries is protection. I need to protect myself. Protect myself, or maybe I need to protect you. Exodus chapter 19, verse 12. You shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, and this is when God was going to speak to them, the Ten Commandments in chapter 20. God's saying, this is what you're going to tell the people. Take heed to yourselves that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. As you come and approach me, stop here. If you cross this line, you will die. In our own lives, if we're going to a mountain overlook, especially one that is maintained, it's probably got chains. Those chains are there for our protection because there is danger on the other side of those chains. This past week, my parents and I and Michelle were blessed with the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. There are barriers and boundaries all over that city. We came up out of the metro. We wanted to go to the Capitol. Actually, we were trying to go to the Supreme Court, and we got to a street. We could not cross that street because the police had put up a barricade to protect, and the president happened to be in the area, to protect the president. They don't know that, but the boundaries and the barricades were there for the president's protection. And those same concepts apply to boundaries that we establish in our relationship, that we establish ownership. And we establish boundaries for protection within our own relationships. Now, when we look up the concept of boundaries within society, and there's a lot of discussion within this in society, it deals a lot with mental health, about trying to take care of yourself and to protect yourself. I'm more concerned with the spiritual concept of ownership and protection today. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 through 20. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. If you have given your life to God, you are not your own anymore. You belong to Him. I belong to God. And with that ownership comes boundaries. He expects me to honor those boundaries. There is a divine ownership. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 10. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. That word keep means protect. We are told to protect our heart, because who we are is defined by what we place within our heart. So God has asked us to put boundaries and barriers around our heart to protect it so that we may remain holy and righteous. The first 9 chapters of Proverbs are written as a father writing to his son. And multiple times, the father tells the son, do not follow the immoral woman. Do not go to her home. Do not follow her path. Why? Because there is danger, there is death there. Those boundaries are for protection. Ownership to God and spiritual protection fit real nicely within this concept, the broader concept of holiness. be holy, for I am holy. That comes with boundaries, because we are owned by God, and he wants us to protect ourselves. You are holy. Honor that and protect that. When you wear nice clothes, especially nice clothes that are light in color, you protect those clothes because you don't want them to get dirty. You don't want to get stained. Protect your holiness with even more diligence. Care for yourself. You and I are dedicated to God. When I graduated from high school, Rick Sparks gave me a book called The Disciplined Life. The Disciplined Life is about maintaining control. And that is about honoring the placing boundaries and guardrails within your life to discipline yourself. So as we consider different relationships in our lives, hopefully we'll understand the need to maintain ownership and to protect our hearts at all times. And these boundaries are not impediments, but as Deuteronomy 6:24 says about the law, it is for our good always. They are there for our good and for our righteousness. It is not good for man to be alone. I am an introvert. What? Yeah, I like that quiet time. I'm going to be totally zapped by the end of tonight. I'm not going to do a lot of talking after tonight. Even the most introverts among us need friends. And you know that, I suspect, because you're here. You're here because there are people here who you want to see. We have extroverts here. We have introverts here. Even the most introverts among us need friendship and close companionship with one or more people. And there is a reason for that. Friendship is valuable and it is necessary. The Bible often speaks of the value of friendships and even describes to us what true friendship really looks like. Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times. Proverbs 18:24, there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. In Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friends. Friends make us better. They give us things that we need that we don't have. They have qualities and characteristics that balance out our weaknesses. Friends make us better. That's what true friends really do. Our closest friends are those which we turn to for comfort, for laughter, for companionship, for counsel, and for support. They know our dreams and they know our fears. We share the largest parts of our hearts with our closest friends because we trust them and we value them. We relate to them the most because they understand us the most, probably because they are most like us. We share a lot in common. Take a little bit of an aside here. I believe our closest friends need to be in the Lord. I passionately believe that. That doesn't mean that we should abstain from relationships, even close relationships, from those outside. But remember how we described our friends, the ones who know us the most, who we turn to for counsel. We need to be turning to people and opening up to people who have the same spiritual goals that we have. I strongly believe our closest friends need to be in the Lord. But even then, there may be times when we simply cannot follow even our closest of friends, where we may need to put up a boundary between us and them. And those can be innocuous. There may be times where two close friends say, you know what, this is a topic we simply cannot ever talk about. That's just because there's such a disagreement between them. They understand we cannot talk about this topic. It may be appropriate to choose not to come to the aid of a friend because they must bear a particular burden on their own. And this is not a lack of love. And I believe Eric is going to cover this particular topic tomorrow. There may be times where like, sorry, I can't help you out. Maybe times because you have something else that you got to do on your own. I was thinking when John was talking about my dad was one that said, if you ever get yourself in jail, give me the call and I'll come pick you up in the morning, okay? If your friend gives you a call because their dad turned them down, then you should probably turn them down as well. My brother, Ben, I can tell this story because he's not here. He got in trouble with Mom when he was in middle school, and Mom said, "You're walking home," because he needed to stay after school. So Ben was walking home, and when the route that he walked home took him by Bill Ford's place. And Bill Ford was like, "What are you doing? Get in the car," you know? And he was driving him home, and pretty close to home, Bill said, "Why were you walking anyway?" "Oh, I got in trouble with Mom." And turned around and he dropped him back off. Said, "I'm not getting cross with your mom." That's a good friend. It can be more. And Jesus, even with his closest of companions, his apostles, there were times where he withdrew himself all night so that he could speak with God. And there can be more serious times where we need to draw this boundary between us and our friends. Deuteronomy 13, verses 8 and 6. "If your friend, who is your own soul, secretly entices you, saying, 'Let us go and serve other gods,' you shall not consent to him or listen to him." Our friends still have weaknesses. Our friends are still tempted. And it may be that our friends fall to those temptations. We cannot follow them. We must draw that boundary and say, "I cannot go where you are going." There have been times when I should have not followed my companions towards activities that were either questionable in nature or just outright sinful. I remember talking with one of my daughters, and she said, "You saying you don't trust my friends?" And my answer to them was like, "No, it's not that I don't trust your friends. I don't trust Satan." That was where the problem was at. As mentioned, these times we must create a separation with our friends. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we value the relationship any less. It can actually be quite the opposite. In Proverbs 27:6, it says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." Have you ever been cut by a friend? You ever been wounded by a friend? Not in spite or in malice, but they loved you and they cut you. And that is a faithful wound of a friend, because they love you. I wonder if our hesitation, and maybe the challenge is that we fear that we are going to what might happen to that relationship if we stand against a friend. It's pretty easy to stand against someone who's an adversary. It's very hard to stand against a friend, because we wonder inside, what's going to happen to that relationship? Am I going to damage that relationship? And that's a real fear. And you know what? You might actually damage that relationship. It may be changed. But your relationship with your friend must always be secondary to your relationship with God. If there's ever a choice, we choose God. And a true friend will recognize that. They will appreciate that and come back. As they come back to God, they will come back to you. Matthew 16, Jesus began teaching his apostles how he would suffer and be killed by the Jews. Peter pulled Jesus aside. "No, that's not going to happen to you." Here's Jesus' response to Peter. "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." That is a sharp rebuke. Do you think that Jesus was afraid of how that was going to change his relationship with Peter? Not at all. Jesus knew there is a boundary, and I am not crossing that boundary. And he called it how it was. Incidentally, notice the problem was not Peter. The problem was how Satan had gotten into Peter. "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Of what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God." This passage in 2 Corinthians 6 is familiar to all of us. And it really has a broad application to all sorts of relationships that we might have. Yes, it has applications to the friends who we choose, the activities which we participate in, the businesses, you know, it may the business partners that which we may have. But I know of no other relationship more deserving of the warnings and guidance of these verses than the marriage relationship. Michelle is my best friend. I value her, the impact that she's had on my life. She has sharpened me in numerous ways. There is no other person on earth who's been more impactful on my spiritual life than that of Michelle. And she continues to be one of the greatest blessings God has ever given me. I don't want to know what I would be like without her. I don't want to know what my, I do not wish to imagine the course of my life had my wife not had followed a different spiritual course than me. When our girls were young, we would take them to Missouri Town, a local place in October. And one of the sites, one of the things that we would always take them to was a yoke of oxen. When we first took them, these oxen were small for the, they looked like large calves, but they were small oxen because they got huge. We saw these oxen grow up, and we would always talk with the lady who was in charge of the oxen. And I'd ask these crazy questions. Why don't you yoke that oxen up to a horse? And what's the purpose of this? And she explained that oxen have to be perfectly matched together. They have to be of the same size. They have to be of the same demeanor. Because when they're yoked together, they need to accomplish this task. And if you yoke an ox to something that is not its equal, you cannot accomplish the task. In fact, yoke mate is a synonym of spouse. When you are married, you are yoking yourself to someone, to your spouse. Do not be unequally yoked. From my understanding, and we taught our children from the young age of the value of marrying in the Lord. Wasn't when we got to, we're going to talk about a conversation I had with the girls later on. That wasn't a new conversation that we had with them. Throughout their lives, we talked with them the importance of finding someone who was of the same spiritual temperament, who was in the Lord, who they could yoke themselves to and help each other out with. From my understanding of the scriptures, God's message is clear. God's children are only to marry God's children. Deuteronomy 7, 3 and 4, regarding Israel's relationships with the Canaanites. Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Do not marry outside Israel. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 39. A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. There was a restriction placed on widows. You can marry again, but they must be in the Lord. These are clear and absolute statements. 1 Corinthians 9, 5, Paul says, do we have no rights? He doesn't say to take on a wife. He says, do we have no right to take along a believing wife? And yes, I know this is a touchy subject, and I understand that there are multiple examples of all sorts which could be presented in defense of a different position. However, giving examples of situations which worked out or situations which did not work out, to me, do not change the specific instructions of God regarding his people. Marry in the Lord. A few years ago, I looked into the purpose of marriage. Why do we have this anyway? It's not good for man to be alone. I'm not entirely sure that's the purpose. We have people here who are not married, and they are not alone. They have each of us here as friends and companions to be there. If you are single, you are not alone. You have the body of Christ. To have children Well, what about those couples who are not able to have children? I came to believe that my spouse needs to make me holier. I need to make Michelle holier because she makes me holier to bring me closer to God. We use this phrase, the better half. We use that to describe our spouse, and in some situations that is clearly more accurate than in others. If you are considering someone and determine that they will not make you holier, then do not marry them. Period. If they are not walking the same walk as you and have no interest in walking the same walk as you, do not yoke yourselves to them. There must be spiritual unity in your home. It must be unity based on conviction, not unity based on convenience. You must speak the same thing, teach the same thing, and walk the same way. Well, what about the process of finding a spouse? Must we only look within the body of Christ? This is me, just me. I don't think so. I'm going to use the term dating, but some of you take the courtship approach, some take the dating approach. Regardless of the approach, the purpose needs to be the same: to find a spouse, not to find a companion, not to have a good time. We are looking for someone who will bring us closer to God. That's the purpose of that process. Admittedly, I'll be a bit hesitant to get into this because I have two sons-in-law here. There's a chance a third is in the audience as well. I cleared that with Natalie to make sure she was okay with it. I will share with you our approach. It is not the only approach, and it is likely not the best approach. Michelle and I were talking earlier this week, and she said there were things I would probably change. We're not going to tell Natalie what those changes are, though. Michelle and I decided while our daughters were still young that we were not going to let them go on dates until they were 16. We could have a vigorous discussion about that age and what that means and why you picked it, but that was the age that we landed on. There are a variety of reasons, which included the inherent risk that comes along with allowing these types of relationships. There are risks with this, absolute risk, and we had decided we were not willing to take on that risk at a certain point. Rule number two is the first date was with me, which is probably terrifying, but that was the rule. In that date, I discussed how I wanted them to approach dating. I emphasized my conviction that marriage was to only be with another Christian. But I didn't make that same emphasis with dating, but I did emphasize protecting their hearts, that they needed to protect their hearts and guard their hearts at all times. If they did choose to date someone who had yet to obey the gospel, the relationship they needed to focus on the most was that between the young man and God. Nothing else mattered at that point. If they were able to bring a young man to Christ through that relationship, then they would always have a spiritual brother, regardless of how the dating relationship turned out. If the young man showed no interest in God or in growing spiritually, then they needed to walk away. Protect your heart with all diligence. To the parents, God has entrusted the souls of your children into your hand. You absolutely have the right to say no. You're not going with that person. And that, you may have to be ready for a battle, but you absolutely have the right to do that. It is our responsibility to do the teaching and the training long before then, so with the prayer that they make the wise choices before we get to that point. I know of a husband and wife that had to shut down a date because of information that they found. There was a lot of angst in the home. The information ended up being wrong, but they exerted that right. As for the experiences with our girls, things were generally okay with Elijah. We knew his family and watched him grow up. Josh was a different story. He agreed to let me share this story, so we're all cool so far. We'll see how it goes. All right. Josh and Ashton began dating in high school. Michelle knew him because of her job as a school nurse. He stood out to her because she would have to go through the vaccine records, he and his family spent some years over in Africa. She saw his vaccination card, and she's like, oh, look at all this stuff. So she remembered him. She liked him, which was good. But I had no idea who this kid was. But I came to learn his parents helped him foster a deep love for the Lord within him. But he needed only to be shown a more complete way. There were many other unknowns. Because he was still in high school, I felt I needed to honor his parents' authority over him. So I drew this boundary. I felt I needed to respect his parents' authority. So with that, Michelle and I watched closely from the side and often talked with Ashton, specifically asking about the spiritual conversations she was having with Josh. And eventually it became clear that this kid wasn't going anywhere. He wasn't going anywhere soon. So despite my previous decision to hold back from deep spiritual discussions out of respect for his parents, I felt it was my responsibility as Ashton's father to have more direct spiritual conversations with the two of them together, and if necessary, to teach them both. So our first Bible study was about truth. We talked about truth, its value, and the nature of it being an absolute and singular. And that was the first of many conversations and studies that continue to this day. But that was the boundary that I placed within that relationship that they had. Agree with it or disagree with it, that was the approach that I took. As our children get older, our relationships with them change, and so do the rules. The boundaries that we previously set for them as teenagers are no longer appropriate for them as young adults, even if they still live in our own homes. I want my children to thrive. I want them to grow. I want them to prosper. And there are times, in order for them to thrive and grow and prosper, I've got to take away the boundaries. I have to treat them differently, even if they are in my own home. Many of the boundaries we place on our children are for their own protection and fear their well-being. Don't play in the street. Restrictions on who they can spend the night with. Restrictions on how far they can drive. Not allowing certain apps on their phones. Not giving them phones at all. These were boundaries that we placed, but those were no longer appropriate at certain phases of their lives. And yes, when we remove those boundaries as parents, as they transition to young adults, it does expose them to hazards which we previously protected them from. But our children need to grow. They need the opportunities to use the wisdom and skills which we've equipped them with. Are they going to make mistakes? Yes. I don't want them to, but they're going to happen. And that's okay. That's why we teach them and guide them. We need to be careful that our boundaries are that we place on our children are not really a lack of faith on our part. And sometimes I think we can place boundaries on our children that really are because we don't have enough faith, whether faith in them or faith in God, that God will take care of them. And now to the married years. Now, I'm not going to get very far in this. I'm going to just tell a couple stories. I have less than 2 years of experience in this regard, but I have a few thoughts to share, primarily from mistakes. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, a man shall leave his father and mother. Now, this is talking about the man, that he needs to leave his parents. Well, what about the woman? What about the wife? It also applies. The relationship between her parents will also change. New boundaries will come into play, and often parents have to let go. Parents, we have to let go. We have to let them grow up. And here is a story. I didn't get permission to share this one, but that's all right. So Sarah and Elijah. Sarah's my oldest daughter, first daughter to get married. And they got married, and on their honeymoon, they were flying out to California. And they were going to have a layover in Denver, and then from Denver go over to California. And I'm being this dutiful parent. Yeah, Sarah knows where this is going. I see that their flight is delayed. And I realize that they're going to have to change terminals. So I get all this information. This is where they're going to land. So I sent her this really long text. And I said, okay, you're going to land at this terminal, and your plane is over at this other terminal, and you have this amount of time. You're going to have to get a bus at this place. You're going to take the bus, and you're going to get over here, and then you're going to turn this direction to go to your plane. The reply was, Elijah's taking care of things. Boom! I got boundaried. If she didn't notice, I didn't reach out to her ever again on her honeymoon. The clear message was, you're number two, leave me alone. That was a reality check. So when Josh and Ashley went on their honeymoon, I didn't reach out to them at all. We need to let our children grow up and pull the boundaries away. And they will place boundaries between us, not because they don't love us. It's because they want to grow. She was saying, this is not yours anymore, Dad. This is mine. This is Elijah's. She was right. So as we consider boundaries and we walk away from this discussion, remember that boundaries are for our good always in our relationships. They are not a lack of love, but they are there because we belong to God. We belong to God, and we are to protect ourselves. There is an eternal reward waiting for those. Pursue that reward. Put up guardrails to keep yourself on the path for that reward. Thank you.